Do you want to learn interesting psychological information in an easy, straightforward, and entertaining manner? Then you need to listen to The Shrink Is In, a podcast show produced and hosted by Dr. Howard Gurr. Dr. Gurr is a practicing licensed psychologist for more than 25 years in New York State, and now he is available to you on the internet. Now, here's Dr. Howard Gurr.
Hey, it's Dr. Gurr with another psychological podcast. Today's topic is on obsessive-compulsive disorder. And to discuss today's topic, I brought in a guest who works with a lot of OCD patients, Mr. Michael J. Connolly. And before we meet Mr. Connolly, let me give you some background on him. He's a licensed professional therapist and president of Positive Pathways. Mr. Connolly is eclectic in his philosophy, but concentrates on cognitive behavior therapy as his core. And Mr. Connolly has experience with clients suffering from depression, anxiety, and especially those with obsessive-compulsive disorder. And he uses what we call exposure therapy, which Mr. Connolly will explain later on. In addition, Mr. Connolly is trained in treating problem and pathological gambling issues, and he received this training at the University of Pittsburgh. You can see more about Mr. Connolly at his website, which is www.positive-pathways.net. And now, let's meet Mr. Michael J. Connolly. Michael, welcome to The Shrink Is In.
Oh, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
You know, the reason obsessive-compulsive disorder came up is because it seems to be more prevalent an issue, and a lot of people are kind of ignorant about what really obsessive-compulsive disorder is, and they tend to confuse it with other things, you know, things that might be just, you know, not a problem or natural or, you know, just part of human behavior. So my question right off the bat, Michael, is what really is obsessive-compulsive disorder?
Obsessive-compulsive disorder, and I think the key word there is disorder. And what you just brought up is a very common kind of mistake that the general population makes. Let me first answer your question: is what is obsessive compulsive disorder? Obsessive compulsive disorder is an illness that actually causes people to have unwanted intrusive thoughts. And with these thoughts, oftentimes comes compulsions. So these are thoughts that cause extreme anxiety, panic attacks, and for the person suffering with them, very often, in almost in most cases, it's a very irrational thought. And I can give you some examples later. But the compulsion, the reason they form a compulsion is it's a way to kind of bring down the anxiety. For instance, if somebody, I'll give you an example, if somebody, you know, has this is what the general population, you know, thinks of when they think of OCD or obsessive compulsive disorder, is the checkers. You know, we've seen this on a lot of television shows and movies, such as Monk and As Good As It Gets. But if somebody has an obsession, I didn't, the door's not locked. And they come back, and the compulsion would be, well, to check the door. Well, that would be normal for you and I if we did it once, maybe even twice. But the person with OCD might do this all day long, not be able to go to work, not have relationships. And that's when that truly becomes a disorder.
Mm-hmm. So when it intrudes on their normal functioning.
Absolutely. You know, and your question at the beginning is, you know, we all do have, you know, these little quirks of our personalities, and, you know, we like maybe our desk to be a certain way, and we like our living room to be this way and such, and that is not a OCD. That is not a disorder. That's actually considered, there's a term called OCP, obsessive compulsive personality, and that's somebody who just a little over particular. You know, they likes the things a certain way, but it doesn't interfere with their daily life. It doesn't, interfere with their job or relationships. And, that's really the difference between the two is, you know, when it's a disorder, and almost in every case that I've seen with obsessive compulsive disorder, there's depression and it's usually severe depression that's accompanied with OCD.
Do you think, I always found that the depression, the secondary depression was kind of, you know, like the same kind of depression people have when they have chronic pain, like they're just miserable and they're just unhappy all the time because of this out of control experience, and then they get depressed about it.
Yeah, it's very similar. It's a depression that's caused a lot by frustration. You know, they know that these thoughts they're having, and that's the kind of thing that I find very interesting with obsessive compulsive disorder. These people are usually very bright, rational people who know that their thoughts are irrational. They're aware of this, but they're still unable to control these thoughts, these unwanted intrusive thoughts. And that's where that depression falls in.
Right.
It's frustration, and it's you know, why can't I just stop thinking about this? Why? And you know, and that's really where that disorder part comes in. You know, a person with OCP or just as an obsessional thinker, they don't have the depression. It doesn't bother them that much. They're okay with being maybe a little anal or a little specific in their life.
So because they could function with it, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it might actually serve a purpose for them. You know.
Yeah.
You know, like. Yeah. You know, if you think about somebody who needs to be very, very organized to function in their job, you know, that kind of personality works very well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, the people that have that OCP about them are very goal-driven people, and they normally achieve their goals because they are very structured, and they are, you know, they want things to be a certain way, so that it does serve a purpose for them, and it doesn't cause any distress on their life. And you're right. Yeah, absolutely. It's not a bad thing to have as part of your personality.
Right.
But again, there's a big difference, and I think that's where the general public. I think that's where some misconceptions are. You know, you hear this term now with movies and shows. You know, and OCD in the past 10 years or so has gotten an awful lot more publicity through the media and such. That you hear people say, "Oh, you have OCD," or "I have OCD," and if somebody has OCD, it's debilitating.
Right, it's more crippling.
It really is.
How common really is, you know, if you could, and if you have percentages or numbers in terms of how common OCD is in the general population?
In the general population, the last study done, it's about 3% of the population. It's about 3 million Americans suffer with the actual disorder, OCD. And on average, most people go 4 to 5, sometimes even longer, years before getting properly diagnosed with OCD. And the reason this is because a lot of these thoughts that a person has, who does have obsessive compulsive disorder, they're irrational thoughts and sometimes embarrassing thoughts. They can be of a sexual nature. They can be just very bizarre. The fear of harming someone they love, and they're very embarrassed to admit that this is some of the thoughts that they're having. Mm-hmm. But one thing I think is extremely important to mention, that somebody with obsessive compulsive disorder never ever acts upon those thoughts. If they have a thought of harm, one of a very common obsession that I see are new mothers or sometimes new fathers that have this irrational thought that they're going to harm their child. And the fact is, they love their child so much that when this thought pops into their head, it's so bizarre to them, and it's so the opposite of who they are. That's why it bothers them so much.
Mm-hmm. So now, if someone does have OCD, what is the best way for that to be treated?
The best way with obsessive compulsive disorder to be treated is it's a two-step approach. One is therapy, and when I get people, when they first come in, it's nice for them to know. To put a label on something if they don't know much about OCD, you know, for them to take a test and say, listen, what you have is an illness that can be treated, and very successfully at that, but with medication. They've found through studies that obsessive-compulsive disorder is a neurobiological disorder, and it's actually, in most cases, a deficiency of serotonin. Mm-hmm. And with proper doses of the right medication, usually an SSRI.
Mm-hmm. Which, for the general population, is like the serotonin reuptake inhibitor, kind of like, you know, what we know,
yeah.
Prozac, Paxil, Zoloft,
right.
those medications.
Exactly. Lexapro, mm-hmm. there's a new one out, Cymbalta, that has serotonin right. and also norepinephrine.
Right.
These are medications that are highly effective, but the difference is when they're given to somebody with depression, they're given at the average dose for depression. When they're given to somebody with OCD, it's at higher dosage. They found that doubling the dosage, for example, if somebody's on Prozac for depression, they might be on 20 milligrams, maybe 40 milligrams. That would be rather high for depression. Where for obsessive compulsive disorder, the minimum with something like Prozac would be 60 to 80 milligrams.
Right.
And I've seen it as, I've seen studies and I've seen people, on 100 milligrams or more.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been very, in my experience with clients that come in to see me, once they get on a serotonin medication, an SSRI, within, the 4 to 5 weeks, 6 weeks, given it time to reach its therapeutic dose, a lot of the obsessions and their symptoms diminish greatly.
Mm-hmm.
But also the treatment that's used in therapy is exposure therapy.
I just want to remind the audience I'm talking to Michael Connolly, a licensed professional therapist and president of Positive Pathways, about OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. And my question, Michael, what is exposure therapy?
Exposure therapy is it's kind of what it sounds like. It's exposure to the presenting anxiety thought that a person has. I'll give you an example. I'll give you a real example of a client that I had who had had a lump in her breast, and her fear was that she had breast cancer. She went to doctors. Doctor said it's not malignant. You do not have cancer. But this thought kept reoccurring in her mind. I have cancer. I have cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it got so bad where she could not even say the word cancer. She couldn't write the word cancer. She would avoid any TV shows that had anything to do with cancer. You know, the pink ribbon that stands for that's for breast cancer awareness.
Mm-hmm.
So the way we use this exposure therapy, and it can't be something that's kind of flooded. So we start at a level of presenting some of these triggers and some of these thoughts to deal with, but we build a hierarchy. So we start very low at a place where the client is comfortable. So where we started was just writing the word cancer, and we did that, and there's a lot of homework involved. So it's writing the word cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens with exposure therapy is the body actually habituates to that anxiety. It gets used to it,
right?
Basically, and it doesn't bother them as so much. So what's very common in OCD is people avoid situations, and that's the worst thing you could do in OCD. You want to actually, it's kind of like when you're dealing with a schoolyard bully. Rather than run away from them, exposure therapy says, hey, we want to face them.
Mm-hmm.
We want to look them in the eye, and we want to face them so that fear goes away. And that's kind of what we do in exposure therapy. And with OCD, it's not always hand washing and checking that people, in the general public thinks. There's a very large range of different thoughts that people have that are very scary to them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that flight or fight response. And when we get anxiety, as human beings, our nature is to run from it. Where exposures to therapy is, we're saying, no, wait, hold on, we want to tackle it. We want to do it systematically. We want to build a hierarchy. We want to start at something that's very comfortable, and as we reach this goal, we're gonna take on something a little harder and a little harder and a little harder, and we're actually gonna go to the extreme to come back to the norm.
Okay, now I got a question. I want to go back a step. You know, you talked earlier about OCD being a neurobiological disorder, and you know, we inherit our neurobiological makeup. So you know, the question would be, is OCD a genetic inherited disorder?
It is. It's something that if OCD, I don't have the statistics in front of me, but I know that if someone in your family, it just like depression and alcoholism, you know, if somebody in your immediate family has OCD, there's a good possibility that you have that gene to develop OCD. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to develop OCD, but genetically you have a predisposition for possibly developing obsessive compulsive disorder, and there's different stages of, you know, different degrees of severity in OCD.
So you know, when you see patients who have OCD, you know, when I have patients who have what I consider a neurobiological disorder, you know, unipolar, bipolar depression, OCD, phobias, I always ask them, go back, you know, start looking at your family, start asking questions, you know, because a lot of these things are hidden in families. People don't want to talk about it. But when my patients start digging, they come back and they go, oh my God, you know, I had an uncle, or, you know, my grandmother, my grandfather, or, you know, my brother would say this, but I never really put it together. And they start to see the pattern that in their family is this thread that runs through, you know, multi-generations of some kind of, you know, behavioral difficulty that has a chemical basis to it. So is that what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I see also patients with depression and other phobias and anxiety disorders. And that is one of the first, you know, during an intake is that's one of the questions we have. And a lot of times, you're right, people don't know their family history. They don't know about their maybe something that their mother or their father had and maybe hid or had and didn't realize at that time, you know, what exactly it was. And the other thing that I found is, you know, as far when we're talking about medication, you know, we work with some psychiatrists here at my office. Now, when a patient decides to get on medication, sometimes, and maybe you've come across this, it's trial and error. You know, some medications work great for people, and some of the same medications don't work as well for other people. But if we know that a family member has depression or they have OCD and they've already done kind of that work, you know, and they have a medication that works very well for them, we kind of know as, you know, as a therapist and then psychiatrist or their PCP or whoever's, you know, administrating the prescription and the medication knows that, hey, this is the one we're going to try. If it works for your first cousin or if it works for your mom or dad or if it works for a sibling, most likely it's going to work for you.
Exactly. I find the same thing because they've inherited the same, you know, neurobiochemical makeup.
Right.
And so, you know, it is your first shot. And generally you're right that if a patient comes in and says, well, my mother's been on, you know, Prozac for years or Lexapro, whatever, you know, Lexapro hasn't been around for a long time, but, you know, Prozac or Paxil, then yeah, that's your first shot because the odds are it's going to work well for them.
Exactly. And, you know, sometimes, to give a medication a fair trial, you need 6 to 8 weeks to say, okay, this isn't working. So you're talking about 2 months. Mm-hmm. So if we know that, you know, if a client knows and I know and the psychiatrist and the treating physician knows, okay, well, their mother or their father or a sibling or a first cousin or somebody, you know, was on Prozac and it worked very well for them, that might save 2 months of trial and error.
Right.
You know, so it kind of speeds up the process. It's all right. We already know what medicine most likely is going to work, and that's where we start. So the intake and family history is extremely important in treating OCD and other, you know, and depression and anxiety disorders when we're talking about you know, psychotropic medication drugs.
Right. How does, you know, you know, we're talking about OCD, we're talking about, you know, the therapeutic approach and psychiatric intervention and psychopharmacology. How do you find an expert who is who treats OCD or an OCD expert?
Well, there's a couple great websites. One is the Obsessive Compulsive Foundation. Mm-hmm. You can Google that in, and it's actually, I believe it's a www, the letter O, the letter C, foundation.org. And they have, and this is nationwide, they have a list of people that specialize in treating OCD. In each state, in each city, metro city, they have a 1-800 number. They have people that you can call and talk to. And it's very imperative that a person with OCD sees a therapist that does have a lot of knowledge in treating OCD. You know, one of my, and it's maybe a personal pet peeve of mine, but there's some therapists out there and some counselors that say, yeah, I know about OCD. You know, I'll see you. And they're not treating it correctly, and sometimes they could do more harm than good.
Mm-hmm. Is there like an international organization or some society? Because part of our audience really is outside the United States, and I'm just wondering if there's any, you know, international group that people could access. If, let's say,
I know the OC, the Obsessive Compulsive Foundation is nationwide. Mm-hmm. As far as international, I got to be honest, I'm not sure.
Okay.
You know, that's something I'm not sure if there's an international, you know, OCD. And again, it's getting a lot more attention in the last 5 to 10 years. So more organizations are you know, starting and coming about. But you know, 10 or 15 years ago, there was nobody out there to treat OCD. There was nobody who really knew what OCD was.
Right. So there might be organizations in other countries that people could access, is what you're saying, I guess?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure in Europe there is, you know, in England but off the top of my head, you know, only because I'm located in the United States, I don't know.
So I have one last question for you.
Yeah.
Is it possible that someone with OCD can live a normal, productive life?
Absolutely, and this is something that I really want to stress. OCD is not a life sentence. Mm-hmm. OCD is, you know, with the medications we have now today, and the new research and the knowledge we have with OCD, it's a very treatable illness and disorder. I have had clients in my office who have come in, and have been on the verge of, you know, at least thinking of suicide, and I'm hopeless, and I can't work, and I can't, and to get them on the right medication and to start treating them with exposure therapy, usually within 2 to 3 months, there's such a turnaround, and it's such a wonderful thing on my end to see, and I'm sure on the client's end as well, but mm-hmm. Absolutely, you know, with the right medication and the right therapy, people can live a normal life, you know, do anything that they would want to do. OCD, you know, like I said, it's not a life sentence, but if it goes untreated, it could become so debilitating that a person, you know, might not be able to hold a job, hold a relationship, leave their house, mm-hmm. and it'll get much worse if it goes untreated.
Right. Michael, we're out of time, but I wanted to give you an opportunity to promote your website so
sure.
people could contact you. So let people know what it is.
Okay. The name of my organization is Positive Pathways, and my website is www.positive-pathways.net. So it's www.positive-pathways.net.
Right.
And there's some links on there, and there's a link about OCD and a lot of about what we discussed. You know, a lot of information, good information, for anybody curious and you know, wanting more knowledge about this you know, disorder.
Terrific. I want to thank you again, and until next time, this is Dr. Gerf for The Shrink Is In.
You have been listening to The Shrink Is In, and your host has been Dr. Howard Gurr. If you want to learn more about Dr. Gurr, go to his website at www.drsgurr.com.